Hello, friends, and let us continue. We're with the Rays and Initiations webinar commentary on part two of the book, and we have finished program 12 and are into program 13 on page 366, and we're discussing the way of higher evolution. So let us see further what is said here. The door into the way of the higher evolution simply permits the entrance of the sensitive initiate. Now, there's a word relating to Leo and to Sirius, the brilliant star of sensitivity, the whole Syrian regime of initiation that leads to the way of higher evolution. It simply permits the entrance of the sensitive initiate into spheres of intimacy, as they are sometimes called, which are, this time, cosmic in their implications. We always enter at initiation into a new sphere of intimacy. What was remote for us now becomes immediate and can be immediately felt and interacted with. So, which gives the initiate what has been called, spheres of intimacy, as they are sometimes called, which are this time cosmic in their implications, planetary in their effects, and this is so important, and which give to the initiate what has been called the key to the sun, as it conditions the solar system, just as the door to initiation gives to the aspirant the key to the kingdom of God. And I cannot help but remember at this point that it is said of the monad. The monad, which is the subject of these higher initiations, especially as they lead onto the way of higher evolution, the monad is that which finds its home within the sun. Now, there have been some theories that one of the ways of higher evolution actually leads to the sun, into our solar logos. But it should be considered that all of the other paths seem to lead to distant constellations which are centers, chakras in the one about whom naught may be said. These chakras are composed of many suns. They are constellational chakras. So it must be realized that our sun is part of a cosmic logos in which our sun is the heart center. Thus, the seven solar systems of which ours is one. So if for any reason one of the paths does lead to the sun, it's really leading to that particular cosmic logos, which manifests through what is called the seven solar systems of which ours is one. Now, there is, you know, honest difference of opinion on these matters, and none of us is really qualified to assert with certainty the accuracy of such speculations. But the speculations are put there, and one day a confirmation will follow. Now, the kingdom of God is entered at the first degree, and one continues in that kingdom of God. But we are talking now not about the kingdom of God, but about the kingdom of solar lives, kingdom of solar lives, not just planetary lives, which is the sixth kingdom beyond the kingdom of souls, but eventually into that great kingdom, the seventh. Every monad has its home within the sun, no matter where else it may venture. Now, the question is, well, these, you know, this speculative, must a monad that goes forth upon a particular path and towards a particular cosmic plane and towards a particular constellation, must it in some way find its way back to our sun, or must it depart from our sun? In other words, this venturing forth upon the way of higher evolution, does it occur immediately, or must one wait until the solar system itself is dissolved, and then one, as a monad, would return to the sun before before the way of higher evolution is trodden? Now, there are probably many objections to that particular theory, and I probably can find objections myself to that. But we have to reconcile the idea of treading the path of the way of higher evolution and going to distant constellations with the idea that the monad is that which finds its home within the sun. And the question is, must it return to the sun before the solar system dissolves, or can it break free of our solar system and go to those distant, one or other of those distant constellations? Well, we don't even know how long those constellations last in manifestation with respect to our solar system, nor do we know that those different solar systems and constellations have to be in manifestation in order for the monad to venture to them. So this would probably be, you know, what I'm saying here would probably be classed in the category of useless speculation. But there are questions which do occur. We don't know how long these great entities are in manifestation relative to each other. And some of the destinations, maybe even the Pleiades themselves, are said to manifest in far shorter duration than our own solar system. But, of course, the entity is different from its manifestation, and when we're talking about monads traveling on a path, we're not necessarily talking about traveling to some manifested star or constellation. The entity is to, which is the their destination, is within, and they are already journeying on the cosmic astral plane or even on the cosmic mental plane. So it's not a question of whether there are externalizations in constellational or stellar form of these great great entities which serve as the destination of the venturing monad, venturing on the way of higher evolution. Anyway, key to the kingdom of God is one destination for the average initiate, and then for the higher initiate, the key to the sun. And this says something about their level of solar initiation. So this says something about the relationship with the solar logos and the level of solar initiation achieved. So when actually do we receive the key to the sun? There's something about the seventh initiation which has much to do with the solar logos and with the constellation Gemini. Can it be at that point that one is receiving the key to the sun? I'm reminded also that a great hierarchy is existing on the logoic plane, and the seventh initiation is taken in relation to the logoic plane, and that hierarchy is called the Divine Flames, and it relates to Leo, and the sun rules Leo. Well, these are, you know, I'm aggregating some related thoughts here, but at the same time, I'm well aware that we don't know, or at least I don't know, the actual meaning of this. It has to have to do with coming into intimacy with some level of the solar logos. See, coming into intimacy with some aspect of the soul of Logos, some level of that Logos, I suspect. And, you know, there are solar initiations which begin with the third and climax with a kind of solar mastership. A kind of solar mastership is achieved at the seventh initiation. Certainly as we begin as monads of the sixth initiation as Chohans, we have to take the seventh initiation somewhere on this higher path. In other words, once we now the Christ is on the ray path at the moment, and I suppose taking this seventh initiation has something to do with that path that he will eventually follow. Of course, right now he's on the path of Earth's service. So is it possible to take the higher initiations on the path of Earth's service? Probably it is. But at least one is treading one of the ways or paths when one does take the seventh initiation. All right, that's speculative material, and when the cosmic fire aficionados and others with a deep love of the arcana of the ageless wisdom can get together, they can hash this out as to the possibilities. We have dealt in the foregoing pages with deep matters and have touched upon topics too high for the understanding of the average student or probationary disciple, even the average student who, let's just say, might be a disciple, in fact, or unless the average student is the probationary disciple. Anyway, I'm sure we have all felt that the matters are extremely high and beyond anything that we might call confirmed comprehension. Dim recognitions, I'm having a bit of a white noise static. I hope it doesn't bother us too much here. Dim recognitions based on past acceptances are, however, possible to some of you. So we accept certain statements as true, and we build upon them. We have seen, among other things, that the so-called door of initiation presents obstacles whose purpose is to block entrance and to draw out the latent will of the applicant. That's very interesting. The door of initiation has a purpose to block entrance and to draw out the latent will. Now, what can this mean? I'll just say the following, along with Master Moria. He says, Master M says that obstacles are possibilities. So, the door of initiation must indeed offer possibilities for growth by evoking the latent will of the candidate to overcome the obstacle. All right. Whose purpose is to block entrance and draw out the latent will of the candidate. An initiate is one who succeeds in penetrating to the further side of the door where recognition awaits him. He will recognize this next dimension. Well, recognition can come from those on the further side of the door, perhaps, but he will also recognize certain things. Recognition may come from those on the further outside of the door of initiation, but also he, the candidate, will recognize and realize the truth of that which before he only dimly sensed. It's like changing from sight through a glass darkly to seeing face to face, the new types of energies which one had some sense of, but could not confirm. We will now concern ourselves with the basic theme of the ashram itself. So, okay, we have dealt, I should have actually maybe completed this in the last program, but of course, I've been trying to keep them to about an hour when I am doing hour-long programs, and this has taken 15 minutes, so probably maybe it was a good idea to reserve this for program number 13. And we're about to, we have been discussing the way of higher evolution, so it has stimulated our speculative mind, our abstract mind. Perhaps it has seeded that mind with some intuitions. It has raised certain questions. We have to realize, certainly, that we as a personality are not traveling upon that path, nor are we as a unit of consciousness which is confined to the higher mental plane. We as a life, a unit of life, a monad, and maybe, I would suspect, a unit of life divested of the monadic vehicle, are traveling that path. So until the sixth initiation is a reality in our lives, and, well, you know, that could be thousands of years, we cannot speak authoritatively of the way of higher evolution. But DK is giving this vision to us to promote the higher correspondence to aspiration. Well, aspiration is still there, of course, but the higher correspondence is this kind of reflective higher thought, which involves buddhi manas and which expands the abstract mind and accesses the intuition and generally proves the antikarana fruitful. So this is, he's giving all of this to us so that we have a destiny. Monadic destiny is a term often used in the teaching, and the true destiny of what we are is the destiny of what we are as a monad, as a unit of life, an emanated unit of life at various degrees of prakritic immersion or immersion in matter, and ever lessening degrees of a prakritic immersion. We are retracing our steps along the path by which we emanated, along which we descended, when being descends to manifest, as it says in the six trumpeted words of Dina 2, page 285. So we are retracing our steps as a monad, and we are divesting ourselves of one vehicle after another so we can travel freely on the way of higher evolution, of course, bound by certain constraints, which are part of the path we have chosen. So, you know, we're still along a certain line, and until we eventually reach the universal logos and re-become one with and as the universal logos, we will always be traveling along a certain line of attribute or aspect, along a certain division of a greater reality. Well, anyway, let's hope that we are inspired to think far ahead about what path we as a monad might travel. We may have some kind of intuition about that. Of course, we have so many immediate things to handle on a much more humble level, many of us have to learn how to control our astral body, have to learn to rid ourselves of the fragmentation which is illusion, simply of wrong thought. We have to learn how to contact that greater and wider love which will eventuate in the destruction of the causal body. We have to learn how to focus ourselves within the spiritual triad and become an aspect of the planetary logos in expression, and all this before we can possibly think of treading the way of higher evolution. But such is the incredible reach of the Tibetan's thinking and his presentation that he just offers visions to us which we could not possibly conceive under ordinary circumstances by ourselves. I mean, you know, you just have to look at the types of speculation that are involved in philosophy, per se. Philosophy demonstrates the need for philosophical occultism and for factual occultism, but is not that occultism. It simply leads towards an understanding that knowledge of these inner worlds and in detail is necessary for true advancement and growth of the unit of life in out of particular levels of prakritic immersion. We're going to learn how to widen our rings past, or ring, how do we say it, rings past not, the plural of ring past not. Okay, well, let's get into this important subject that we're going to call the entering of the ashram. And it looks like a long section going some almost 70 pages, maybe 65 pages. So, this theme necessarily has great interest for all aspirants and would-be disciples. Okay, well, and that's especially when we are rather self-centered and view the world anthropomorphically, according to the nature of man. But, you know, DK is going to, in a way, disappoint us, at least disappoint those who are looking for the particular microcosmic approach to this subject. But he says, but I'm not at first going to deal with the subject from the angle of humanity. Maybe he will again later. He's already dealt with it quite a bit. And its effort to establish contact with the ashram. He's going to deal with this differently. So maybe if you've already done some work in his books and in Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, the beginning of the book, the end of the book, and some of Volume 2, you are prepared then to study the type of presentation Master DK is going to give. I desire, first of all, to speak of the ashram as a whole, constituted of many ashrams and creating an invoking area of relationship for the supreme head of the ashram, Sanat Kumara, the Lord of the World. An invoking area of relationship. Obviously, Sanat Kumara is being called upon, is he's been called upon, and he is invoking as well the response of those who are gathered in the greater ashram. We are speaking of the greater ashram, right? So this is the greater ashram, consisting of all Ray ashrams and their divisions, and their sevenfold divisions. 49-fold ashram of Sanat Kumara, and he can call forth response from those who are members of these ashrams, and they can invoke him. So it's a relationship between the great Lord, Sanat Kumara, and those who are aspiring towards further and more intimate relationship with him. I seek to enter into no discussion of this leading life of our entire planet. You know, he who is an aspect or emanation of our planetary logos, and sometimes called the planetary logos himself. He is, to a still greater being, the one referred to elsewhere as the one about whom naught may be said, what the vehicle of a master in physical incarnation is to him. And on a less accurate basis, what your personality is to you. Now, you know, we might say here, okay, which one of the one about whom, ones about whom naught may be said, are we discussing? Are we talking about the super constellational logos that has its center, I would say, within the Pleiades, or are we talking about the Lord of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one? We could call that cosmic logos a kind of one about whom naught may be said. Or we somehow, if I were to look here, let's see, if I were to go to page, well, I think what I'll do is just get rid of that altogether and start afresh, because for some reason, yeah, now that's looking a little better. At least I get the boxes I need. So I hope I remember the page number. If I go to A Treatise on Cosmic Fire and I go to page 285, I'm not sure whether... that's not the page. I wonder if page 235... I usually remember this particular page number is the page, and that's probably not the page either. All right. Well, now I do have it. It's page 293. I guess I haven't been to that page for a while, and it morphed into some more easily memorable page number. Here are, you know, various great logoi. And we see that above a solar logos is a cosmic logos which manifests through seven solar systems and uses the solar logos as its center. And this is what I call, at least for us, the seven solar systems, of which ours is one and its great ruler. Now, beyond that, we have the unknown, who is the... our local, one about whom naught may be said. There do seem to be a number of them, at least according to the, at least my interpretation of chart five on page 344. There seem to be indicated there even beings even greater than the one about whom naught may be said. So this is the unknown, and that term fits well with the one about whom naught may be said, and it manifests through seven constellations, and the cosmic logos is its type of chakra, and it operates on five cosmic planes from the atmic plane on down. Now, you know, I may go to that particular chart. I have located our one about whom naught may be said as this green triangle. The colors are provided by Keith Bailey, you know, who was drawing these up for the AUM group. And but the colors, you know, probably have a lot to do simply with the progression of the rays, and it makes it more vivid for us. But what is this great being containing that particular green triangle? I call it a sub parabrahmic logos, and it's much greater than a one about whom not may be said. And from my perspective, there are then 49 ones about whom not may be said in this particular diagram. And above them all is a cosmic parabrahman, which is really probably one of seven, and on, you know how that particular chart goes, which shows us there all these rising, seems like forever rising septenates. So even at the top of this chart, we have a one, but that one is probably a seven. Well, in any case, do we think that our tiny little planet, somewhere down here, maybe not even drawn on this map, maybe these are the seven sacred planetary logoi, has no intermediary beings between it and a one about whom naught may be said, our one about whom naught may be said? I would say that it is more likely that a cosmic logos is going to be working through our planetary God, and certainly our solar logos is, and only then are one about whom naught may be said, in whom this cosmic logos, which contains our solar logos, which contains our planetary logos, well, I don't think I can get to the end of that sentence, but they are all working through our particular heavenly man. So, he is to a still greater being, the one referred to elsewhere as the one about whom naught may be said, so I'm asking, which one? As there are probably a number of these great beings of whom naught can be said. What the vehicle of a master in physical incarnation, and that's a Maya Virupa, basically, composed of lower substance, the vehicle of a master, which let's call in physical incarnation, let's say, thus a Maya Virupa, okay, a MVR, composed of substance from the dense physical body of the solar logos, what the vehicle of a master in physical incarnation is to him. Now, what do we mean by the vehicle of a master? Do we mean only the physical vehicle or the personality vehicle? What do we mean? So to what level shall we assign Sanatkumara, to a strictly physical level? And I'm going to ask that question. Shall we assign Sanatkumara and his planetary demonstration to a strictly physical level? Or shall we consider the entire personality manufactured or envisioned personality vehicle of the master, not just the physical part of it? Yeah, and here I think we get the hint. It's not just about the physical body. It's about the whole personality. So it is not just about the physical body, but about the entire personality. And so can we honestly say that our planetary demonstration is as a personality to this hugest of the ones about whom naught may be said? All right, that's a difficult question, but it seems that the scope or the span or the distance between what we have called here, the one about whom naught may be said, is too great when coming down to our solar logos. Even the, to what is the, our planetary logos in Sanatkumara like a vehicle? And we might say, well, the entire planetary manifestation is a personality to what? Kind of like a personality to the soul nature of our planetary logos. So all I'm pointing out is that there seems to be a very great ontological distance between this super entity, a super constellation of logos, and our tiny little planetary demonstration, which Sanatkumara is supervising. Even when Sanatkumara is compared to the Logos of Sirius, we are given to understand that there's a tremendous distance between them, but somehow the Logos of Sirius is nonetheless cognizant of our planetary deity. Well, the Logos of Sirius is probably part of this cosmic Logos that we've been talking about over here, this cosmic Logos, and our cosmic Logos is part of the unknown, of the one about whom not may be said. So the distance increases tremendously, and if it was unusual to think that the Logos of Sirius could be cognizant of our planetary Logos, i.e. Sanatkumara and the planetary scheme, then what about the Logos of a cosmic seven suns and more? And then what about the Logos, super Logos, of seven constellations and more? It seems like a greater distance than is easily understood. Well, I just, you know, bring that out to try to show somewhat the nature of the analogy being used. Anyway, he is to a still greater being, the one referred to elsewhere as the one about whom none can be said, but the vehicle of the master in physical incarnation, Dasamaya Varupa, is to him, and on a less accurate basis, what your personality is to you. To you, maybe in this case, to you as not only a soul, but a monad. Maybe that's what it is. Well, I realize, you know, that I have not completely explained that. I'm not capable of it, but at least I'm capable of drawing, offering some thoughts about the analogy that is being offered and some of the intervening entities of a ever greater nature, which must be considered. Look, a heavenly man, a solar Logos, a cosmic Logos, the unknown. Here's a heavenly man, here's the unknown. We've got two major entities between the unknown and the heavenly man. So that's why I'm wondering if this term, one about whom not may be said, can be variously applied to different types of beings. And as if, you know, perhaps there are more than one level of ones about whom not may be said. And even when you are referencing a being that we think we know something about, if we're referencing a part of that being that we know nothing about, such as the monad of the solar Logos, for instance, then maybe we can use a term like one about whom not may be said. It's certainly a one, and we can't talk about it. So, well, and the galaxy too is one about whom not may be said, and on. So it may be a generic term. I don't want to relativize things too much, but I seem to be invited by my own thought to do that and not just simply accept verbatim what is stated without the attempt to interpret. Is to you, it is an expression of the soul or of the monad when a disciple has attained initiate consciousness. So let's see, let's read this over again. He, the leading life of our planet, is to a still greater being, and we notice that the monad is included in what we just read, to a still greater being, what the one referred to elsewhere as the one about whom naught may be said, he is to a still greater being, the one referred to as the one about whom not may be said, what the vehicle of the master in physical incarnation is to him. It's kind of like a monad-vehicle relationship. We are dealing here with a kind of monad-vehicle relationship. Okay. And on a less accurate basis, what your personality is to you. It is an expression of the soul or of the monad when a disciple has attained initiate consciousness. All the qualities, the love, and the purpose of a supreme entity, referred to in the New Testament as the unknown God, are focused in Sanat Kumara. All the qualities and love and purpose of a supreme entity, referred to as the unknown God, are focused in Sanat Kumara. Well, who is, you know, again, the unknown God? Do we have to stretch that far? Some gauge of the unfoldments which can lie ahead of humanity will enter the human consciousness. Okay, so we're into a new subject. And this particular subject, if we're really talking about the one about whom naught may be said, in the sense in which he is portrayed here, as having seven sacred solar systems, and probably many more, representing him, and each one of those cosmic loci having seven sacred solar loci, and probably many more, representing it, a cosmic logos, then one wonders how all the qualities and love and purpose of a supreme entity, referred to in the New Testament as the unknown God, are focused in Sanat Kumara. You know, one is even tempted to think of the solar logos or one of the seven rishis of the Great Bear, who are just part of a cosmic logos, which itself is part of the one about whom naught may be said as we usually think of it. So, you know, sorry, you know, no resolution here, but a plowing of the field of thought so the different associations can arise and we can ponder these matters. You know, always there has to be a sense of occult proportion. If you find that relationships meant to, let us say, indicate soul and personality, or monad and personality, are too wide, too distant, then you have to question whether there may not be, perhaps, an occult blind here. So, you know, the question of how this supercosmic logos, when the question arises, how can the logos of Sirius even be mindful of our little planetary logos and his planet, then you wonder what can be said about the logos of a being which includes, simply as a chakra, the being of Sirius. Now, I mean, which includes as a chakra, the being which includes Sirius as a chakra. And I'm assuming that Sirius is somehow included in the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. Well, you know, DK has said that the material in cosmic fire, there will be a lot of interest in it in the fifth round. It's millions of years ahead, right? And will be reduced to textbook form later on in that round. So while I don't think what we are engaging in here is the wildest speculation, I consider it to be reasoned speculation, it is nonetheless speculation. And with reluctance, I leave it behind at this moment. Maybe you are not experiencing that kind of reluctance as I try to move on here, because, you know, it could be a confusing subject. But all I can say is, always go back to page 293 and see these five levels and how each greater level includes the lesser one. It shows some amazing chakra relationships, and it's not even complete. I'm saying that what is portrayed on chart 5, page 344 of Cosmic Fire, is a sevenfold relationship, and the unknown becomes simply a chakra in a greater sub-parabrahmic logos, which itself becomes a chakra in the topmost entity possible in such a tabulation, a cosmic parabrahm. Of course, that word parabrahm does not really mean what it does to Hindu philosophy. I mean, that's the one and only being we're talking about. when we're talking about Parabrahman, we're talking about that which is the absolute. But just the use of the article a cosmic Parabrahman shows us that the term Parabrahman cannot possibly be used in that way, in this case. All right. Hoping for illumination to come on these matters, although there are probably many more important things of an immediate nature which must be faced and somehow mastered before any of this material really makes any practical difference. Maybe this is telling us something about where the energy which animates Sanat Kumara comes from, our planetary logos, where it comes from, and the distant sources from which it may arrive. I mean, probably the one about whom not may be said is a factor in the consciousness of Sanat Kumara. Just the way the solar logos is, just the way our local cosmic logos is. But let me put it this way. You know, I seem to be having trouble leaving this subject. Our local cosmic, cosmic logos. Our local cosmic logos is really an unknown entity. Sometimes we hear of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, but we do not hear of the logos of that seven solar systems, of which ours is one. So I sometimes call this cosmic logos the one about whom naught may be said, level one. And some people fight me about that, you know, that I don't have a right to do that. And the super constellational logos, which is our usual one about whom not may be said. I call this one about whom not may be said level two. And what this implies, of course, is that you could keep going. The sub-parabrahmic logos would be called a one about whom not may be said level three, and the cosmic parabrahm level four, and who knows what level we would get to before we got to the galactic logos about whom we could say nothing, or the logos that informed families of galaxies, those galaxies being simply as chakras, and on, families of galaxies forming chakras, and on. About these entities, we can say nothing, so they are all ones about whom naught may be said. All right, well, we can go on a little bit now, if I can pry myself loose from this tantalizing subject, which has vexed my consciousness for years. Okay, some gauge of the unfoldments which can lie ahead of humanity will enter the human consciousness when the fact of the hierarchy, the nature of its white noise, lots of thunder out there, the nature of its relationship to Shambhala, the spiritual nature of those who respond in reverent obedience to the slightest wish of the Lord of the world. Oh, you know, just think of the reverence which masters of the wisdom express. You know, we're worried a little bit about being devotional. DK told one of his students that it's your devotion that got you to us, not your mind. And look at what is said here. The spiritual nature of those who respond in reverent obedience to the slightest wish of the Lord of the world. I find that awe-inspiring. So when these things, the fact of the hierarchy, the nature of its relationship to Shambhala, hardly expected, suspected at all by the great majority of men, and the spiritual nature of those who respond in reverence, obedience, and reverent obedience, these are the masters, Shohans, and even the members of the council at Shambhala. He is their hierarch, and they certainly have learned the cult obedience along the way. So these factors have to be among the accepted truths, not just accepted as truths, but truths whereby men live. And this will happen, a whole new paradigm will appear. Whole new paradigm will appear after the externalization of the hierarchy. So it's really amazing, amazing paradigm which hierarchy intends to bring to humanity. And we think of these as very remote matters. And how can people consider these kinds of things when they don't even know the fundamentals about reincarnation and cyclic opportunity and eternal evolution? How can they accept these things? But the way is being prepared internally and very quickly. That which is obstructive can fall away. Okay. The Lord of the world is the sole repository of the will and purpose of the one of whom he is an expression. Well, of whom is the Lord of the world an expression? Well, let's call the Lord of the world an expression of the planetary logos. He is an expression of the planetary logos, but also of the solar logos, and even of the, and even, and let us say more remotely, of the cosmic logos, of the local cosmic logos, and also to a very slight degree of the one about whom not maybe said level two. This again can be understood by you as evoking the same relation to the unknown God as your personality when expressing adequately the soul and later the monad. Well, I must say here that one of the rishis of the Great Bear, stands as the monad, stands to our planetary logos as the monad stands to the, well, is it the personality to the, let's say, is it the personality or the soul-infused personality? Or soul-infused personality. Maybe this will condition our perception. Okay. This can be understood by you as evoking the same relation to the unknown God. See, who is the unknown God? I tried to go through that, and let's just say there are a number of unknown gods. So a cosmic logos is also an unknown God. But okay, let's realize also that what we usually call the unknown here, or the one about whom not may be said, is also an unknown God. So of the one of whom he is an expression. This again can be understood by you as evoking the same relation to the unknown God as your personality when adequately expressing the soul and later the monad. So, who stands, what stands to our planetary logos as the soul stands to us? Is it not, in a sense, the soul of the planetary logos? Is it not? And, can't get that straight. And who stands to the planetary logos as the monad stands to us? Is it not the monad of the planetary logos? But somewhere it is said that, you know, the rishis of the Great Bear stand as the monad. And I wonder if I can find anything like that. Rishis, monad, maybe. A heavenly man with his, here it is. I would point out here the close relation between the seven rishis of the Great Bear and the seven heavenly men. The seven rishis of the Great Bear are to them what the monad is to the evolving human unit. Remember, each one of these rishis is just part of a cosmic logos. And a cosmic logos is just part of a supercosmic logos, which is the one about whom naught may be said. So page 273, and I'm going to quote this. And I'll change the colors so we know, TCF 273, that it's not something that is necessarily supposed to be commented upon in this book. Okay, I'll put it in green. All right, so we just have to understand analogical distance, I guess. Can I call it that, and would it be meaningful if I call it that? Here, I'll say that. We must come to understand, I'll call it analogical distance. And where the distance is too great, it's between two factors, is disproportionately great when compared with the distance between the two, other two factors, which are related to the original two. As an analogy, one has to suspect an occult blind or information which is not yet revealed. I hope that makes sense. You know, in other words, let's put it like this. Is the monad, let us say, to the soul-infused personality, what the one about whom naught may be said, the great one, is to the planetary logos? Or is the relation between the monad and the soul-infused man more like the relationship of a star and the Great Bear to our planetary logos? I hope you understand. I hope I understand. It seems inevitable to bring cosmic fire into the picture. Why am I doing that? Why do I bring cosmic fire into the picture? Because we are working synthetically at this point. We are working synthetically. And the whole writing of the Tibetan is fair game in a way, you know, relating this to that. And we're not only studying one book, we're studying a synthesis of the books. Every book that is studied is related to all the other books. It's like one great book, what the Tibetan has given us. So we are free then to call in associations from other books. At least I'm making those rules, and I hope it helps at least some of us. Okay. So this again can be understood by you as evoking the same relation to the unknown God. And, you know, what is that unknown God? I've given some different ideas about what that God can be. To the unknown God, as your personality when expressing adequately the soul and later the monad conditions your perception, knowledge, plans, and purpose, and controls the quality of your life and directs the energy which you express. Yeah, so the soul will affect our perception, and the monad will affect our perception. What we're trying to do here is understand, well, I'll give another word, okay? Here, we are trying to understand, I'm going to call it this, dimensional distance separating various entities focused within various, and let's use the word, spheres of intimacy. Whether, you know, microcosmic, planetary, solar, cosmic, supercosmic, etc. All right, friends, well, I realize that, gosh, we haven't gotten very far at all here, have we? We're on page 368, and we probably began this thing on, where? On 366. We haven't really moved very far. But it's such deep matters. So let us say this is the end. I will say the end of Rays and Initiations webinar commentary program, 13 pages 366 to 368, and we'll begin in this subject, Rays and Initiations webinar commentary program 14, pages 368 to whatever. His vehicle of manifestation is the planet and its seven centers, of which only three are as yet recognized by the occult student. So now when we take this up again, we'll be getting down onto the planetary level and will not have to reach quite so far. Okay, well, I think that's enough. I'm sure you'll agree that's quite enough. But we'll take up the subject again, descending a bit into a more normal sphere of consideration with Program 14. See you soon. Bye-bye.